Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, but we're going to be talking today not just about mind power. We're going to be talking about action power. That's right. Just thinking about something doesn't often get anything done, but everything does begin with a thought. If we want to make a difference in life, there's so many, various ways to be able to do that. My guest today, Fred Feldman, is a man who is very deeply committed to personal philanthropy, and he put out a publication, How to Save the World on $5 a Day. And when I saw the title, I just had to chuckle, and I said, you've got to be kidding, $5 a day? What could you possibly have to say in this book? Well, when I got the book, it's not a big book, but it is a powerful one, because it shows the interaction, the difference one person can make by being consciously present with the action that they do. There is a ripple effect, and my guest, Fred Feldman, will be sharing some of the information about the ripple effect and how the circle of life often demonstrates itself in unexpected ways. Fred Feldman, welcome to the show. Hello, Fred.
Yep, I'm here. Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome, Fred. Fred, you have been writing for a long time. You have been a consultant with people for many, many years, and you've worked with a different nonprofit organizations. You have actually been very actively involved through the years in fundraising. You are in the Boston, Massachusetts area. You really feel good about what you do. Why is it you chose to take this path that you've taken? And what has been some of the most educating aspects of what you have chosen to do, being involved in philanthropy?
Sure. How did I get into this end of... How did I get into fundraising? I started out in commercial direct marketing, customer affinity programs for banks, airlines, that sort of thing. And one day I came home from work, and my daughter, Annalise, who was just a little girl then, asked me, what'd you do today, Daddy? And I was forced to tell her that basically I spent my day coercing people into transferring their credit card balances back and forth. I decided then that I wanted to do something more meaningful, so I made the move from the commercial direct marketing end of the business into the fundraising nonprofit side of the business and began working with very large charities through their mail programs, the things you get at home asking for donations, so I could at that point say to my daughter, well, today I helped the Alzheimer's Association raise hundreds of thousands of dollars to cure a terrible disease. So I decided I wanted to do well and do good at the same time.
That is an interesting combination of thought, because in so many people's minds, they'll say it's either or. You are often, one is often indoctrinated, not you, but one is often indoctrinated that you are supposed to be totally self-sacrificing and you should never, ever have an idea of prosperity. This is promoted with many different cultural aspects in different parts of the world. You have people that will say, well, if I focus on just the money, then I don't need to worry about anything else. I'll just make sure that my own corner of the world will be very self-serving, and to heck with the rest of it. You managed to do a balance here, and I really like those words, that you wanted to do well, and you wanted to also serve. And to me, anyone that is doing what they love to do they automatically are doing that. You cannot be out in the world doing a business if you really enjoy it and not serve, because if you have an attitude of giving the best, that's what happens. But you decided that you wanted to go a step further, and that was to become involved in training people and also in being able to pass on what you have learned. Your book on how to save the world on $5 a day is basically a parable. And I felt when I was reading it that you drew on a number of your own personal experiences to incorporate life into these characters. Am I correct?
To a certain extent, only to the extent that every writer draws upon personal experience in their writing. The book is definitely fiction. I wanted How to Save the World on $5 a Day to be an entertaining read, first and foremost. I wanted my readers to keep turning the pages in order to find out what's going to happen to the young couple in the book who fall in love as they take their journey toward enlightenment through mindful charitable giving. Also, in writing my book as a fiction parable, it allowed me some creative license to make my points in what I thought were the most effective way. For example, there's a character in the story who figures strongly in the story who was a baseball player for the Boston Red Sox before World War II. By casting my story as fiction, it allowed me to take some license with who that player was and his baseball experiences without getting involved in factual inaccuracies. And finally, as a fundraiser, someone who writes the letters and the communications that people get at home asking for contributions on behalf of charities, I've always tried to use stories to put a human face on the mission of my clients. So at the end of the day, I consider myself a storyteller, and I suppose that's why I chose the parable format for my book.
I think any effective speaker is always going to be a storyteller, because it's the stories that touch the heart and the mind of any individual, regardless of who they are, where they come from. They want to be able to have a relationship, an understanding with whatever theme or point of information you're trying to communicate. And that is a fact. I don't care where you are in life. That is very definitely a fact. And that's what I found in your book. It sort of surprised me when I started reading it, because I think you packed a lot into this publication, which, again, is not a big one, but the story has so many different levels to it. You have this woman whose name is Annette. And, of course, she is in her late 20s. She is making a difference in her own way. She lives in a shabby neighborhood, and there's many of those around. And when I was going through this, and when I was thinking about doing the show this morning, I was reviewing in my mind details that are going on in different parts of the world. Greece, for example, who is going through such a quagmire of confusion, frustration. And I thought, there are, with all of the media coverage, there are still those individuals that are in that environment that are going about their daily lives, doing what they need to do, doing the best that they can, and interacting with each other in a way of support. But we don't hear about that. What we hear about are all the rumblings and the ramblings, which contributes to a lot of fear. And that's one of the points in your story. Actually, one of many points. But one is, don't get caught up in the fear and look at what possibilities are in front of you. What can you do with what you have at the moment? What is it that you can utilize? And that is how you started off. And I liked the No-No's lucky $5 bill that Annette always carried. What triggered that particular imagery for you?
Well, again, as a storyteller, I work in metaphors, and I think in metaphors. So to me, the $5 bill represented, call it a talisman, almost an object on which one could meditate. The book, my book's focus, there have been many books written on philanthropy and reaching out and doing good for others, how to do it, and all that sort of thing. My book is different in that my book approaches it through the lens of mindfulness. I guess you could say that the heart and soul of my book, and it is in the book, is a few simple words that we've heard 1,000 times. When it comes to giving, it's the thought that counts. Now, when you take that the obvious way, that's simply a way of saying it's nice to be nice to others. It's the golden rule, I guess, of do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But if you view it through the lens of mindfulness, it takes on a totally different meaning. Being mindful and present during our acts of giving is what allows us to see the world with new eyes. So say we write a check to the electric company, to a charity for $5, it's as if we were paying the electric bill. It's merely the cliche aspect of following the golden rule, and that's admirable, but it won't change your world, which means it won't change the world, since the world, I believe, manifests itself according to how each of us perceives it. However, I think if we're mindful and present during our act of charity, even if that act is just giving a few dollars, $5, if we treat our charitable acts as meditations, we'll see the world, and that means the world, with new eyes. And that's really the heart and soul of how to save the world on $5 a day.
You have a character, John, who ends up being, he ends up going through some very, very intense experiences. One of them is a dream where he sees himself being hit by a taxi. And he's given in the dream the information that he has one day to find his purpose and to save his life. Now, that's quite a powerful statement. One day, 24 hours. And it makes one think, what would one do if one had one day? What would you do if you had one day to change your life, to really find your purpose? What would you do? This is an aspect of perception and thinking that brings a whole different twist to the story.
Yes, and I think it's really the primary tenet of mindfulness and the idea of living in the now. I guess that was my attempt to sort of encapsulate that message. Really, we all have a day. I mean, none of us knows what comes tomorrow, and really tomorrow's an illusion, just as yesterday was an illusion at this point. All we can do is live in the now. So that was my attempt to sort of kickstart John's gradual journey to enlightenment in the course of the book through mindful giving.
We all interact. There are those links with people many times that we never expect to have. And it creates what in Native American terminology is called the loop. And we call it the circle of life. That's something that even Disney picked a theme with that. And there is a beautiful song written about the circle of life. And Annette has an experience where she meets someone who, for many people, they would just ignore the person. He is a little bit disheveled. He's elderly. He is just not in a very good state of mind, and there are circumstances that make her aware of him. It's as if there is an electrical current that occurs between the two of them, and then there's a happening, and she finds that there is a connection with this man. She literally saves his life, and that is part of the connection in this circle of life that your story is all about, on how to save $5 a day. Did you draw on someone that you knew for this particular character? for this elderly man?
Actually, no. I created him. He's my character. I think the prototype is a common one. It is but that's why I called my book a parable. I think in parables there's a common character, a character who occurs again and again. We can call him, I don't want to give too much away because it would spoil the enjoyment of the book for those who choose to read it, but there are characters throughout literature, mythology, who travel in disguise, so to speak, or incognito, or are simply perceived as being someone far more humble and vulnerable than they really are. And that, I suppose, is the inspiration for this particular character. But I don't want to say too much, because if I say much more, it might spoil the reading experience. But he is an archetype in literature and myth and folklore and parables, I think. What do you think?
I think that that's true. And I think that's why parables are so wonderful, no matter what culture they come from, because they have many subtle messages in them, just like yours does. And one of the points, as you brought out earlier, is it isn't the size of the gift. And a gift, it doesn't have to be $5 a day. It can be volunteering. It can be thoughtful. It can be helping people. There's so many things that we can do to give to life, to assist other people, to make this world a better place to be in, instead of focusing on what isn't working, what's broken. Let's look at what we can do to make things come into harmony. Let's be inventive. Let's be productive. But there's also a flow of life. And I think that's something that many times people get very concerned about. They want everything to be in a black and white scenario. And that's one of the gifts that your parable gives, is that life is more like a rainbow. It is not a black and white scenario. You never know how your action, your assistance, your giving to someone is going to ripple on to someone else. There is just this phenomenal invisible effect that for anyone who has been able to stand back far enough to observe things will see. And that makes part of what your story is so absolutely wonderful, because one of the lessons, the character John, the young man who had this vivid dream, he's very much the artist. And part of his journey is learning the artistic expression, and he's taught this by a person in the book, that there are many ways that art can be expressed, and he's locked into certain modalities of thought. For him to break out of that, it takes someone else calling attention to what they do know and what he doesn't know. And it's a shift in thinking. And we're always going through that, all of us. I don't care who we are. I don't care what our economic level is. There's never an end to learning, ever. It's always there if you're open and receptive. And that's one of the gifts that you give here. And one of the challenges, too, is that John is always doubting himself. And how many of us do that? We all do.
Absolutely, absolutely. John probably is closest to someone I know, which would be me, in the sense that he is an artist who feels he has not reached his audience. So in the book, John learns that there are different ways for artists to reach their, if you could see me, I'm doing air quotes, audience. John learns that he is touching people and changing their lives. But what's most important, and what John really learns, and this goes back to what you talked about changing thinking, what John really learns is how to think about his acts of generosity, of his acts of charity, altruism. Most of us don't really think about how we are being good to other people. And if we did think about them, if we did think about our acts of charity and meditated on them, that would change our perceptions of ourselves and would ease our stress, ease our doubts about our self-worth, make us feel more successful, more integrated into the world, which is what meditation is really all about, which is what enlightenment promises us. So, you know, Zen mystics say that we're all enlightened, we've just forgotten it. And mm-hmm. I think that we're all enlightened when we perform acts of charity, whether it's waving someone into traffic or writing a small check or a large check or volunteering, doing whatever we can. We need to focus on those acts of kindness that we're doing every day and meditate on them, and that will give us an enormous sense of well-being, and that's really the core principle of how to save the world on $5 a day. It's not about how you're helping other people. There have been a lot of books about that. It's how you're helping yourself.
Good point. You have a statement in your book, generosity, giving, positive action, gratitude leads to satisfaction. And
right.
I think that's very true. Very true. Generosity, giving, positive action, gratitude leads to satisfaction and fulfillment. And you have a wonderful story in your parable about a tinker. And I think the statement by the tinker, one of the segments of it is, what I see I can repair and so bring about one less broken thing in the world. Because this is an elderly man that for years he's not made a lot of money, but he's repaired things. And that statement, I bring about one less broken thing in the world. And I thought how poignant that is, because we're often told that we are the throwaway society and that to be a good custodian of what we have, oh, don't worry about it, just toss it in the junk heap. And I thought this is very good because we need to know that we can be good custodians in life and that being able to fix things, being able to take care of what we have is very, very significant. And that is something that brings value to the world that we live in. And then I liked another quote you had in your book, a man giving a little during his life is better than a man who gives a lot at the moment of his death. And I thought, that is pretty profound. That is very, very wise. And if we could live our lives in that way, where every day we look at each day as a gift and give the best of what we have and give it with a sense of joy and purpose, my goodness, the ripple effect could be phenomenal.
Correct. When I was doing the research for the book, I was struck by how the book combines charitable fables from Catholicism, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, and so on. And I was struck by how the thoughts and the philosophies from all these diverse religions and cultures are very much the same when it comes to charity and altruism and giving to others. And every one of those statements comes back to the idea that a little bit of charity every day is better than a huge act of charity on one's deathbed. And I think that all ties back to telling us that if we think about our acts of charity every day, we will have far more, we will enjoy our lives far more than if we don't and wait till that final moment when it's too late to think about them. It's all about mindfulness. Mindfulness, I believe, I've always been fascinated by it. As a younger man, I studied Zen. I've been involved in the martial arts in an attempt to meld body, mind, and spirit. And I think that what the message I deliver in How to Save the World on $5 a Day is a pathway to enlightenment that any one of us can take, even as we go about our day-to-day activities in our busy worlds.
I agree with that. And one of the points coming full circle with what I mentioned about the newscasts that were being promoted yesterday, hopelessness. It saddens me when I hear people say, well, that's just the way it is. Everything has to fall apart, and there is this expectation of darkness, ugliness, and that, gee, that's just the way it is. It isn't the way it is. And it's so important for us to be actively present with the fact that what we think and what we do makes a difference. And we make a choice every time we determine a certain attitude. And I know one gentleman that I interviewed many years ago, he used three words that would shift his thinking. And if he was encountering a problem, he'd also always just have this mindful thought that he wanted the most benevolent outcome. However that would be, there was just that expectation. And he said it shifted his life tremendously, whether it was for someone else that he would hold that thought or for himself. That he said, I had to make shift. And I think that's what's going on today in today's world. We're having to make shift. We need to know that change is a part of life. And that is one of the gifts that your book gives on how to save the world on $5 a day. This is something where we need not only to be mindful of it, but we also need to be able to teach it to our children, because they are going to be experiencing their world. And if they're given tools of thinking and action and intent and awareness, that's going to enable them to deal with the challenges that come up through their world as they experience it, which may be quite different from the one that we have today, especially when you think about the changes that have evolved. That's going to be the case. And you make a statement in your book, it's our intent to give an awareness of our acts more than the amount of our personal philanthropy that'll bring about a brighter future for us in terms of our personal outlooks on life and for our planet as a whole. And I think those are extremely powerful words. Now, Fred, what is your website where people can go to that website and check out your information?
Sure. My website is Fred Lawrence Feldman, FredLawrenceFeldman.com. There they can read excerpts from How to Save the World on $5 a Day and find out if they'd like to read more. The book is also available at Amazon and all e-outlets and all e-formats and as a paperback.
This parable that is How to Save the World on $5 a Day really is fascinating. What he has been able to incorporate and the messages that are given in the parable really are delightful to read, and you probably would be able to relate them to your own life. And this would be something, I think, that if you wanted to give a gift to a school, if you wanted to share with people that maybe are down and out in their lives for whatever reason, making them aware that this is a part of their life that they can change. Intent, action, purpose, well, it is all a wonderful, wonderful team of valuable tools to work with to make this world a better place. And I think it is so needed at this time. Fred Lawrence Feldman, I want to thank you very much for being my guest today. Go to his website, FredLawrenceFeldman.com, and you'll find out more about this phenomenal story and also about some other things that Fred has put together. Thank you so much for being my guest today. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be absolutely delighted to do so. And the number to call into is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, in just a few days, it's going to be Easter, and I came across a delightful poem, and as I'm looking out of my studio window here, and here in the Pacific Northwest, it's drippy, a little bit wet out there, but the flowers are just absolutely incredible, and the cherry blossom trees are just marvelous to see coming to life. The pinks, the whites, they are just absolutely gorgeous, and this poem is done by Edna Dean Proctor. It's called Easter Bells. Of course, Easter is in just a couple of days. And I look outside and I thought of her little poem and I thought, I've got to share this with you because this is what Edna said. I think of the garden after the rain and hope to my heart come singing. That mom, the cherry blooms will be white and the Easter bells will be ringing. Easter bells will be ringing. There is just this wonderful celebration that occurs with spring. And I encourage you to get outside, put on your walking shoes, get outside, and smell the wonderful fragrances of spring. Hyacinths, they are out. There's just the daffodils. Tulips are coming out. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. And there is a liveliness that just is exuded by spring. And when you have a chance to get out in it and you can smell it, it just makes your heart soar, especially after dark winter months when you haven't had too much of that. And I know some of you in certain parts of the country, you're still dealing with snow, yes, and you're dealing with those cold temps. We are too, still here in the Pacific Northwest. But it's absolutely, absolutely invigorating. And you know what? Not only is it good for you in that standard concept of being out and walking, but there's something about the fellowship that you can develop with people that go out maybe in the morning, afternoon, or evening, whatever time of the day you choose to do it. But there's just this wonderful camaraderie that develops. And I know that with our little Scottish Terrier, that's what we do. Little Victor will go out with us and my goodness, people will stop and talk about him, and maybe they have a dog. It's just amazing. There is that socialization that can occur, but more than anything else, it is the connection with nature that I think is so wonderful. And I just love it when I see window boxes filled with flowers, and I'm seeing people out in their gardens. They're connecting back with the reality of the joy that spring brings. It's just wonderfully refreshing. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. By the way, tomorrow we have a surprise guest. Aspire Higher is the publication. Susan Bender Phelps is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about what we can do to mentor others. That's right. We all have something that we can give and that we can share. And this is something that Susan decided she wanted to give information about doing because mentoring has enabled her to achieve the level of success that she has acquired. Also, we're going to be talking with Cora Holmes up in the Aleutian Islands in Alaska about a novel that she has put together regarding an Inuit legend. So we're going to be talking with these two lovely ladies, and I hope that you'll join me. Like I said, it's a surprise guest. Of course, it's no longer a surprise now because you know. I wanted to share a story with you, and this is going to take us not all that far back in the time travel spectrum. Try 1976. That's right, 1976, October the 25th. Follow in your mind a trip to North Carolina, and there is a 20-year-old woman by the name of Shirley. She's up in the morning early. She likes to go for walks early morning. Well, to her amazement, On this particular date, October 25th, 1976, she sees a little man. Now, I'm not talking about a dwarf. I am not talking about a midget. He was a garden-sized gnome. That's what he was described as. She said he was small, brown-skinned. He was in clothes that were made of thin material and also wore boots. And he shined a light in her face. Well, that caused her to yell a little. Dogs began barking. Now, where she lived was more like a farm environment. There was a cornfield that wasn't too far away from where she was walking. And this little man runs into the cornfield. And when she looks at where he runs, she follows. And she sees these little tiny footprints that have been left in the hard ground. But those little footprints weren't in the soft ground. And the prints vanished right in front of her eyes. Now, near that same time and place, there was an 8-year-old named Tomley. He was playing in the corn stalks when he saw the same little guy. He said he wasn't much bigger than a Coke bottle, and this little man was rummaging through his pockets. And the man was dressed in blue with black boots, a white tie, and a German-type hat. He said the mini-man dashed away. His boot tracks were 2 1/4 inches long and 1 inch wide. I wonder if he knew Stephen King. I don't know. But those are stories, just fun stories about people's experiences. And who knows, maybe one day you'll have one of your own. I never laugh at people's stories, because I find many times there's a lot we just don't know about. Sometimes I think we become a little arrogant. We think we know it all. And my goodness, someone made a statement to me, "Are you finished reading?" And I laughed. I said, "Are you kidding? You never end up knowing it all." And even though I review 400 to 600 books a year, let me tell you, this world is filled with amazing things. And I am always delighted to share different points of information, perspectives, and insight with you, because it brings just as much to me as it does to you. So take joy in the fact you should never, ever be bored. And if you are, be grateful, because maybe in that aspect of boredom, you're going to come up with some point of genius that will make this world a better place. Everything moves in a very interesting and fascinating way. By the way, I have got a wonderful recipe that I wanted to share with you. It's a toasted pecan goat cheese with Tupelo honey. Now, you can use any kind of honey, but you want to make sure, if you can, that you use natural honey. Now, honey is a natural product, but sometimes there are honeys that have been cooked and processed to such a degree that they really don't have very much flavor. So this is Tupelo honey, and the reason Tupelo honey is considered so good with goat cheese is that there is a Tupelo tree that has flowers, and it's a deliciously mild honey. Goat cheese has that wonderful bite to it. I really enjoy it. But the creamy, the crunchy, the zesty taste of goat cheese really go together. And this is how simple it is. This would be a great snack at any time. And with the Easter holiday coming up, it might be something you just want to have as an hors d'oeuvre if there is a small group. You can double this, triple it, whatever you want to do. But this is all you need. You need 3/4 cup of pecan halves, 3/4 cup of pecan halves, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 log, which is about 11 ounces, generally, of goat cheese, and that should be at room temperature. You're going to need 3 tablespoons of honey. If you're not able to find the Tupelo, use your favorite, but it shouldn't be a real strong flavor. And then you might want to have like a loaf of French bread or a baguette that is sliced thinly that can be used with it. Now, this is how simple the recipe is. You preheat your oven to 325 degrees. You cross lengthwise. Cut your goat cheese love in half. And then you want to shape each half into a round disc. And you want to put this on a piece of parchment paper. Or you could even use wax paper if you didn't have parchment paper. You want to take your pecans, that 3/4 cup, put it on a baking sheet, sprinkle it with a little bit of salt, and you want to toast it in the 325-degree oven until they're slightly brown. There is this wonderful perfume that pecans give off when they're roasted. And you just stir them every once in a while. It's going to take about 8 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, depending on your oven. Then you want to remove the pecans from the oven, and then you want to let them cool. And if you desire, you can transfer them to a piece of wax paper. Once they're cooled, you want to finely chop them. You can do it by hand, or you can do it in a food processor, or, you know, a chopper, a nut chopper. It doesn't make any difference. Then what you do, you then take that goat cheese, the little round patties, you'll have two of them, you roll them in the pecans until they're coated on all sides, and then you make sure you press the pecans in. They go into the soft cheese. And then you put it away in the refrigerator until you're ready to serve it. Now, when you're ready to serve as an hors d'oeuvre, the goat cheese should be put out so it can soften at room temperature. And when you put it on your serving dish, then you drizzle it with honey, and you can serve it with bread. And you may want to have a little side dish of the honey that if people want to scoop a little bit out so they can spread it on their bread, gives some extra sweetness there along with the goat cheese. It is delicious. But that is so easy to do. It is so flavorful, and it is something that is just wonderfully, wonderfully refreshing. And, you know, it's good for summertime, anytime. You want something that's light, tasty, and have a little bit of wine with it, perhaps, or some sparkling cider, and you've really got a nice little item there. It's a great conversation maker, too. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break. Oh, before we take a break, I want to remind those of you in Western Washington, day after tomorrow is the Emerald Spiral Expo in Kent, Washington, being held at the Kent Commons. And I'm going to be there along with a lot of other people. I'm going to be doing mini sessions. I'll have a booth there, and I'm going to have loads and loads of books, CDs, DVDs. And I encourage you to come by and say hello and maybe take some of them to add to your library. Now, this is 9 to 5, day after tomorrow, Saturday, the 30th of March, and all you need to do is just come on in. The admission is free. Bring your family. It's a wonderful way to spend Saturday. Saturday is going to be absolutely gorgeous here, and I'd love to see you there. I'll be doing many sessions, and again, I will have these books. So check out emeraldspiral.com for more information. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. When we were talking with Fred earlier today about being a philanthropist, doing things like this, sometimes the way we can help people comes in an unexpected way. Now, that's what happened with a young man by the name of Angie. Well, not Angie, Blaze was his name. Angie was his mom. Now, Angie's son, Blaze, from the time he was just a little person, size of the grasshopper, as soon as he could talk, he decided he wanted to be a policeman. Now, isn't it interesting with kids how they will get a thought in their head? And you wonder, what in the world made him think of that? Well, he determined he was going to be a policeman when he grew up. Well, Angie, his mom, didn't think that that is ever going to happen. There's no way. Why? Because Blaze was autistic. Now, Blaze lived a good life. He had a good family. And when he was 18 years old, his mother wanted to surprise him. So she did something that I don't think many moms would think of. she supported his dream of becoming a policeman by buying him a real police officer's uniform. She got him the navy blue shirt and pants, got him the hat, a badge, a walkie-talkie, and a whistle. That's right. She got the full gear. And what she did next was really planning things out well. She called her local police department to ask if there was an officer that would come in their patrol car and pay Blaze a special visit and wish him a happy birthday, his 18th birthday. Well, you can imagine. When that request was made, there was a police chief that said, "This we will be happy to do." Well, an officer turned up on Blaze's 18th birthday, showed him the inside of the squad car, let him turn on the emergency lights, and even the siren. It was quite an exciting birthday for this 18-year-old. His mother said, "I have never, ever seen my son so happy, and he loved his uniform," because this had always been his dream. Now, the police department was so affected by this passion that this young man had and the fact that one of their officers, fellow officers, had shown up at the birthday party. They said, "Hey, come on over to the station. We want to show you around." Well, what do you think Blaze did? Well, he got in that uniform. That's right. He got in that uniform, and he dressed the role. After all, that had been his gift. And one of the officers took a special interest in him because he himself had a son that had autism. And he said, "It really meant a lot to me when I saw Blaze's enthusiasm, because I have a son at home. And my son doesn't always understand, because of autism, exactly what's going on." And he said, "The most important thing I found with my son is that I just wanted him to be happy," which is what Angie, Blaze's mom, did for her son. Well, this was really special, because this officer gave Blaze a badge and said, "You know what, Blaze, you're going to be my backup deputy." Well, when Angie heard about this, Blaze's mom, she was just overwhelmed. She was in tears. Blaze kept in touch with that officer, and one of his favorite statements was, "I've got your back. I've got your back." Well, do you know what? This officer has developed a wonderful relationship with his deputy. They talk about all kinds of things, and he takes Blaze for a ride in his patrol car. And he said, it makes me feel good, because I feel like I'm reaching this young man that needs to know that he makes a difference in my world. And the officer said, "It's exciting to be a part of the dream he has and to be a part of his life." Well, Mom went another step. She took a picture of the police officer, which is Lieutenant Mike Hill, and her son Blaze, and I have a copy of it in front of me. She posted it on Facebook, and she wrote the officer a note of thanks, also expressing her appreciation for her local police department. Do you know, by posting on Facebook, they have received over 350,000 likes. Amazing. What a world we live in when a photograph can touch the hearts and minds of hundreds of thousands of people. You know what this officer said? He said, "I'm here to serve the community, not just protect it. When you touch a life, well, that's what it is all about." I had to share that story with you today because, you see, you don't know when you do something that is going to make a difference for someone else. And that is the highest form of philanthropy. Nobody may write about you in People's Magazine or Times or the New York Times or something like this. But the important thing is that you do what you know you can do for someone else at any given time. And when we're bombarded so frequently with the ugliness of life and the bad things of life, and you just hear it over and over and over and over again, you think that that's all that there is in the world, and there isn't anything else. So I like to think that through this programming, we show you that you make a difference and that people like you, that maybe don't have big titles, maybe they do have big titles, but they go about the business of living with intent and with purpose. And you know, the circle of life is fascinating because you don't know how you're helping one person or guiding someone, giving them mentoring, sharing information is going to enable that person to step forward and do the same for someone else. If we become an example of the best we can possibly be, we're going to turn this world around. We really are. And instead of having massive strikes and a lot of hate and a lot of anger, instead, we're going to show that by mindfulness, we can create change. We can be resourceful. We can make a difference. If something is broken, like the tinker in Fred Thelman's book, we can fix it. We can recycle. We can revitalize. But you know what? You have to be doing, not just talking, not just flapping the lips or flapping the gums, as I say. Talk is cheap. It is what you do with what you express. How are you giving to make this world a better place? Are you willing to learn? Are you openly participating in this experience of life? If you are, by golly, you are going to make this world a richer place. And again, you never know when you plant a seed of positive action, how it is going to be able to blossom. The giant sequoias in California that are thousands of years old came from a seed that you can barely see in the palm of your hand. Greatness comes not necessarily with speed, but with intent, right purpose, right action. Put it out there. You're going to find that your life will be much richer because of it. Well, I want to let you know, again, tomorrow we're going to be talking about how you can aspire higher. Also, again, we are going to be traveling to the Aleutians to chat with Cora Holmes, who is a wonderful novelist. And then next week also, we're going to be talking about life on Nubis. We're going to go in for a bit of science fiction. Are you game? I love science fiction. And then Lori Beck will be talking with a woman who, by all odds, shouldn't even be here today. And her book is titled, I'm Living to Tell. This is a woman. She's walked the walk. And now she's sharing her story. West Coast kid. Travis. Ah, yes. Travis is a man that has walked a walk I wouldn't recommend to anyone. And he's going to be the first one to tell you that. Boy, are you going to get an insight into what I call the dark side of life. He came out on the light side. So I think you'll find his story interesting. The courage to be profitable. How does that sound to you? Do you think being profitable takes courage? Believe it or not, it does. It's not just dealing with the bottom line. It's dealing with some factors that if you want to do a business, that you have to pay attention to. Ruth King is my guest. And then advice is for winners. Raul Perez is going to be my guest a week from tomorrow. And I'll tell you what, he has got a wonderful attitude about life, and we'll be sharing all of that with you. This and much, much more is going to be coming out on the Donna Sebo Show, and I am so delighted that you've taken time out of your busy day to spend it with me, and I wish you nothing but the best. Be well, be happy. Remember always, You're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Never, ever give that up to anybody else. Enjoy your day, your life. We'll be here same time, same place. Won't you join me? I'd love to have you. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.